since the beginning of the so-called vaccinations, we have had excess mortality up to 40%, maybe more. This is a lot. This is extreme. So the most important thing is to stop these measures, to stop people from having to die in isolation alone, away from their loved ones. So ridiculous, so inhumane, so cruel.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Conversations That Matter. We have spent a lot of time talking about the COVID, the coronavirus, the measures taken by governments around the world to supposedly deal with this virus. With us today, an incredibly special guest, a man who's done probably a more in-depth investigation than maybe anybody on the face of the earth, believe it or not, an internationally renowned attorney who is on the warpath right now, trying to get to the bottom of what is going on here. So we're very honored to have with us Dr. Rainer Fuhlmich. He has been an attorney in Germany since 1993. In 94, he was admitted to the bar to practice in California. He mostly has practiced in banking, stock exchange law, international private law, and also medical law. You may have heard of him and some of the cases that he's worked on. He has done some very significant cases, including working on the case that the Volkswagen, where they were cheating on their emissions. And so he is an attorney of some international renown who's taken on some major players, including, incidentally, Deutsche Bank, one of the biggest banks in the world. So he's got a lot of experience. He's a serious individual. He's now also the first elected chairman of a new German grassroots political party called Die Basis. We'll ask him a little bit about that as well. Dr. Fuhlmich, thank you so much for being with us. And I want to start off talking about the investigation of the Corona Investigative Committee. I understand you guys have looked at the spread of this disease, the alleged spread of this disease. We hear a lot in the news about there's this many cases, there's that many cases. But one of the things you guys have looked at is the PCR test and its role in maybe amplifying these numbers. Can you tell us what you guys found with the pandemic and the role of the PCR test?
Well, yeah, it all started out when my wife and I were still living in Northern California at our ranch. And we're all these news were coming in, calls from our friends and neighbors were coming in about a lockdown having been put in force in Europe, and not just in Germany, in Europe. And I thought, this is wrong. There's something seriously wrong. And when I got in touch with my good friend, Dr. Wolfgang Wodak, who stopped the swine flu 11 years ago, exposing it as a mild flu, not a pandemic, he put me in touch with my now friend and colleague, Viviane Fischer, and we set up this Corona Investigative Committee on July 10th of 2020, because we didn't expect any answers from our government or the mainstream media to three of the most important questions that we had, and we believe that the general public also had. How dangerous is the virus? How reliable is the PCR test? And how much damage are the Corona measures doing? Now, the PCR test, we focused on it by accident, because one day I was riding the subway in Berlin with Wolfgang, and he said, oh, by the way, he was about to get off. By the way, you know that the PCR test can't tell us anything about infections. And I pulled him back into the car and said, no, but you have to explain this to me. And then he got me in touch with all of the experts, Ulrike Kämmerer, finally, Dr. Mike Yeadon, who's the former vice president of Pfizer, very smart, very good man. And in essence, what they told us is that had it not been for the PCR test, there would not be a pandemic. They needed the PCR test in order to create the cases that didn't exist. Because from the outset, very quickly, we realized that there is something out there. Yes, there is a virus out there. It may be part man-made or maybe even completely man-made. We don't know that. But it is no more dangerous than the common flu, because the funny thing is that the human immune system is such a magical tool. It can deal with almost anything, including this virus. So the infection fatality rate of this virus is no more than 0.14 or 0.15%. This is what the WHO, and this is what Professor John Ioannidis of Stanford University both agree on. So why do we have a pandemic then? Well, because they created it through the PCR test. The PCR test's major flaw is it's a great tool, in order to make things visible that the human eye otherwise cannot see. The original inventor by the name of Kary Mullis, won a Nobel Prize for it, but he kept pointing out, you cannot use this for diagnostic purposes. And this is what it says on all of the inserts, not approved for diagnostic purposes, yet they're using it for that. And the basic problem is it cannot distinguish between live and dead matter. It cannot tell the difference between the fragments of the body's immune system's fight against the common cold or the flu or corona. It cannot tell the difference. Also, in order for a virus to be infectious, it has to enter the cell and start replicating there. You need a whole virus. Now, this test only gets fragments of a virus. And the most important thing is you can use it in such a way, abuse it in such a way as to create cases that otherwise wouldn't exist. Everyone agrees now that if you put, what you get is on the swabs, you get the whatever you take from the throat or the nose and whatever. And if you look at it, you can't see anything. So you need a machine in order to make it visible. Most of these machines, actually all of them, are owned and operated by Roche. We're making truckloads of money off of this. And you have to magnify, or this is the way they call it, amplify what you see. And they call this cycles of amplifications, 2, 4, 8, 16, et cetera, et cetera. And everyone agrees that past 24 cycles of amplification, now, this, regardless of the fact that no matter how you apply it, you cannot tell anything about infections with a PCR test. But if you go beyond 24 cycles of amplifications, everyone agrees, even the New York Times, that this is totally unscientific. You can't use it anymore. And that's why the Frankfurt Health Public Health Agency disregards anything that goes beyond 24 cycles of amplification. Dr. Mike Yeadon told us that at 35 cycles of amplification, I think you're in the billions of magnifying then. This is unscientific speaking, I know that. But at 35 cycles of amplification, you end up with at least 97% false positives. Now, the way that his test was set up, and accordingly everyone else's PCR test, because his test served as the blueprint for, because it was recommended by the WHO, the way his test was set up, it was set up at 45 cycles of amplification. So what do you expect? You get 100% false positives. And that's what they wanted in late or early February of 2020, because I'm gonna spare you the details, but most of the people probably know about this. In the meantime, this is an agenda. This has been planned for at least 10, probably 20 years, maybe longer. But we have very concrete evidence that it was planned for at least 20 years, with the final dress rehearsal being the now infamous event 201. But in order to roll this out, they needed cases, because in order to create a pandemic, you can't do it without any cases. Cases meaning people who are infectious. And that's why they invented, with the help of this now also infamous Professor Drosten of Charité University in Berlin, that's why they created these two basic lies on which everything is founded. One is there are asymptomatic infections, when in the meantime we know, no, they're not. At least not with respiratory viruses. If you go see a doctor and tell him, I have a problem, then the first thing he's going to ask you is, what symptoms do you have? And are you going to say, I don't have any? My only problem is Drosten and Fauci? Huh? So that's not going to work. So we know in the meantime that he lied when he claimed that there are asymptomatic infections, because he knew that even the one example that he pointed at when he explained in his preprint that there are asymptomatic infections, a Chinese woman who had traveled to Germany through Frankfurt and then infected quite a few people, she did have symptoms because she was treating them with anti-flu medication. And you don't do that because anti-flu medication tastes so great. And the other thing is, of course, the test. His test was then created because he wanted to tell the public, I know you're going to be afraid of everyone now, because everyone, even though if they have no symptoms, could be potentially dangerous. But I have the way out, because I have invented this new test, this new PCR test, which can tell you if someone is really infectious or contagious or not, when in fact he full well knew that he was lying, because we have found an article with an interview that he gave in 2014 to a German business weekly, explaining that a positive PCR test doesn't mean a thing. You can be perfectly healthy and still test positive. So that's what we're dealing with. That is the basis for everything, the PCR test.
Dr. Fiodomich, I want to ask you about the excess mortality rate, because, you know, actually in 2020, my wife and I looked at the Swedish data. The Swedish government keeps very good data, and we found there was absolutely no excess mortality whatsoever, none whatsoever. In fact, there were 3 years over the last decade that had higher mortality than 2020 did, and Sweden did absolutely none of this draconian attacks on freedom to supposedly deal with coronavirus. Now, you guys have looked into this question of excess mortality and where it has been measured at all, especially in 2021. You argue that it's been caused not so much by COVID, but by other things. Talk to us a little bit about what is supposedly killing people in this pandemic, so-called.
Well, before the so-called vaccination started, I don't think there was any excess mortality anywhere. Those few spikes that were visible and that were shown, in fact, paraded in front of the entire world, they're in Bergamo, Italy, and the other places, New York, of course. In the meantime, people agree that all those alleged COVID victims in Bergamo and in New York, 97% of them died of completely other causes. Same in Sweden, 85% of the alleged COVID victims died of completely other causes. We also have to take into consideration that the people who died of or with COVID, that's another tragedy here, because they don't even distinguish between whether someone died of COVID or just with COVID. Somebody who tested positive and then was run over by a truck died of or with COVID. I mean, it makes no sense. But the spikes that we see in both places, Bergamo in Italy and in New York, were most likely caused by malpractice. Many of these people, for example, in Bergamo, this is an area in Italy where a lot of very old people live, people who have lots of comorbidities. And what happened there is, just before the so-called pandemic, they were vaccinated. I forget against what they were vaccinated, but that kind of damaged their immune system. Then they decided that because there's all these thousands and thousands of possible COVID people, COVID cases that are going to need the beds in the hospitals, they decided to transfer all the other patients, many of whom suffered, for example, from the common flu, transfer them into the care homes, into the nursing homes. And there they met the people whose immune system had already been damaged by the prior vaccination. And I mean, it's very obvious that this is not a good thing to do. Yet, both there and in New York and in Germany, it turns out that most of the people who died had lived long beyond their average life expectancy, and many of them, if not all of them, had had serious comorbidities. In New York, a similar picture. A few places in New York were overwhelmed. Yes, that is true. Some of the hospitals were overwhelmed, but that happens every year. Same here in Germany. Every year, you see these white tents up in New York, that is, white tents outside the hospitals. They even had a hospital ship, I think, by the name of Comfort, which could have put, I think, 1,000 or so patients. They could have put 1,000 patients on this hospital ship, but I think it was never used by any more than 20 or 40 patients. So what was going on there? Well, they used some medication that they shouldn't have used. For one of them is remdesivir. I think it was mandated by Fauci, not just in New York, but in the rest of the country as well. And one of the experts who we spoke with is a doctor by the name of Brian Artis, very smart man. And he explained to us that Fauci should have known that this is one of the methods of treatment that are going to be deadly, because that is what it had turned out to be in a number of studies in which it had played a role previous to this. The other thing is they should not have, of course, a lot of people ran into the hospitals because of the panic. They had spread this panic message. You have to go see a doctor. You have to go see a hospital. Go to a hospital if you want to survive this. That's why a lot of people who, under normal circumstances would have probably stayed at home and recovered from the flu, because that is what we believe most of this was. These people entered the hospitals, and there they received two high dosages of hydroxychloroquine. In some cases, hydroxychloroquine should not have been used at all, because between 20 and 30% of the Afro-American and Latin American population suffer from a genetic, I guess you shouldn't call it a genetic defect, but this is how Dr. Wolfgang Wodak explained this to me, called favism. Which is great because it makes you less vulnerable from, this is from where they come from, less vulnerable for malaria. However, this genetic defect makes it impossible for you to be treated with hydroxychloroquine. So they shouldn't have treated these 20 or 30% of the population with hydroxychloroquine. They did it. So that was, even though that's a really good way to medicate these things, I'm not saying this because of my own personal knowledge, but we've heard this from all these doctors, it doesn't make sense for them. On the contrary, it's dangerous. And also intubation. Intubation instead of oxygen masks. That is, it's always damaging because it destroys some of the stuff that, you always suffer certain damage, which makes it easier for the spike protein, which is the most dangerous part of this virus, to enter your body. Normally, your body's immune system fights it off right here. This, because it's a respiratory disease, it fights it off right at your front and nose. But if you inject it into the body, or you cause lesions or something through intubation, then this very toxic spike protein goes directly into your body and causes all kinds of damage, including blood clotting. So these spikes were caused by, well, I should say, malpractice.
Wow.
Wouldn't have happened without these measures.
Yeah, we've spoken with many doctors who've come to similar conclusions, including Dr. Brian Artis, who just said, yeah, I mean, these people were in many cases killed in the hospital as a result of the so-called treatment that they were receiving. We've only got a couple minutes left in this segment, so I've got a couple of quick short questions. And then when we get back for the third segment, I want to ask you about whether there's an agenda here and what sort of remedies would you like to see for dealing with this. But what is the role of the World Health Organization in all of this? I know they're getting big funding from Bill Gates, and I know there were key players in spreading this kind of panic around the world. But what has been the role of the WHO in this whole mess?
Well, the WHO is just a subdivision of the United Nations. However, it is in the meantime being more or less totally controlled by people like Bill Gates, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And Bill Gates, in turn, is one of the largest vaccine makers in the world because he has invested his money in pretty much every single one of them. That is why in some parts of this world, where the judiciary is still functioning, India, for example, they're going after Bill Gates in the meantime, because they have understood from past experience, they've learned the hard way, that this has nothing to do with health, but rather what he's trying to do with his so-called vaccines is population control. And they have, in fact, I just spoke with one of my colleagues from India. Her name is Deepali Oja. They have filed a criminal complaint against him. And if worst comes to worst, he's going to get the death penalty.
One of the most obvious questions, Dr. Fiermich, is this deliberate? Are there forces behind the scenes that have a nefarious agenda, or is this just kind of incompetence, stupidity? These people don't know what they're doing. They're just running around frantically, trying different things to see what works. What is your sense after interviewing all these experts? Is there a deliberate pattern here? Is there an agenda here, or is this stupidity? And if there is an agenda, what is it?
Well, it is very obvious, for at least to us it is, that this is an agenda that is being rolled out. It's been planned for at least 20 years, probably longer, but we can pinpoint it back to 20 years. They started with what is called Operation Dark Winter, and the final dress rehearsal was then the Event 201. 10 years ago, there was another such rehearsal. All the usual suspects were involved, Rockefeller Foundation, et cetera, et cetera. What is behind this it's really a financial crime, an ongoing financial crime. You remember the world economic crisis some 10 years ago. It more or less coincided with the swine flu, which was their first attempt at diverting our attention from what they were doing. The so-called financial industry, which is not an industry, it doesn't produce anything. It's just, and I know what I'm talking about because I worked for Deutsche Bank. It's one of the worst criminal organizations in this world. So what they have been doing through the financial industry, a small group of super rich people who invested their money into BlackRock and Vanguard, who then invested the money into Deutsche Bank, VW, and all of the other global corporations. What they've been doing is they've been looting and plundering our world assets for at least 20 or 30 years. This all has much to do with what we call the Davos clique, which is a group of self-appointed political elites and corporate elites. Behind all this is this small group of super rich people who have merged their own puppets who are running their corporations with the people who are now running our governments. Most of them have not really been appointed by us. We think so because we think we voted for them, but most of the people who are running our governments, who are not our governments anymore, come from this platform, the World Economic Forum, the Davos clique. Why do I say this? Well, in 1992, this group of people decided that they would have their own output in future world leaders. And they call this a program Young Global Leaders or Global Young Leaders. And the first two people who graduated from this program in 1992 were Angela Merkel and Bill Gates. Almost all of the people who are now leading our countries, most of whom appear to be really stupid and quite obviously stupid. Look at our former Secretary of Health here in Germany. His name is Jens Spahn. He is so stupid, it's hard to tell if he knows how to tie his shoelaces. Then the new Secretary of Health, his name is Lauterbach. Then there's Macron, President of France. There's Justin Trudeau of Canada. There's Jacinda Ardern of New Zealand. All of them are graduates of this program, this Global Young Leaders Program. So this is the group of people who are running the show. However, we can only see those puppets, but we can't see the people who are pulling their strings. I don't even think that Bill Gates is one of the people who is pulling any strings. Maybe he thinks so, but we don't think so. We do think it is extremely important to expose this, to get this information out to the people, because this financial system, which they have been exploiting for much too long, was about to crash in 2008. Well, it did crash in 2008 and 2009, but instead of cleaning things up, the only solution that they came up with is printing money, starting the printing presses. So the next time this crash was about to happen was in probably September of 2019. Again, they needed something to divert people's attention from the fact that trillions of dollars had been stolen from them, both in the United States and here in Europe. NATO plays a big role in this here in Europe. So they were pushed into an early start. I think what is happening right now should have happened 2 or 3 years later because they weren't quite ready. But the system was about to crash, and that's why they then started the rollout of this pandemic program, which is really a plandemic.
Yeah, and we're just kind of caught in the crossfire. Huh? So what sort of remedy? I mean, you're a lawyer, you go to court and you seek relief. Ideally, in an ideal world, if we had a properly functioning judicial branch, if we had legitimate mechanisms to get this under control, what sort of relief would you like to see? Would the committee like to see? Do we need prosecutions of individuals involved in this? A halt to the mandates, laws put in place to prevent similar horrors in the future? Where do you guys go from here? Is there going to be accountability?
Absolutely. We need to focus on two things. The first and most important thing is to stop these measures, to stop the so-called vaccinations, which are not vaccinations. They're not even experimental gene therapies. They're experimental gene manipulations. And as we all know, or most of us know in the meantime, the death toll is extremely high. We're already seeing new figures coming in that since the beginning of the so-called vaccinations, we have had excess mortality up to 40%, maybe more. This is a lot. This is extreme. So the most important thing is to stop these measures, to stop people from having to die in isolation alone, away from their loved ones. So ridiculous, so inhumane, so cruel. They have to pay for it. This is the second thing. They have to be held responsible, both criminally and civilly. And since I'm cooperating with a large group of international lawyers from all over the world, South Africa, India, the United States, of course, England, other European countries, we have agreed that very soon, within the next 2 weeks or so, we're going to start with an international trial, which is probably going to be something like a grand jury investigation, so that we're going to present with a real judge, by the way, real attorneys, real expert witnesses, and real witnesses who will testify to the damage that they suffered because of the shots, for example, or the economic damage. We're going to present all of the evidence to the jury, which is going to be our viewers, in order to ask them, do we have enough evidence to indict these people? We're going to go after four people to start with, but we know that there's others. So that's the criminal case. But also, we have to take into consideration that everyone, because of these measures, has suffered damages. And even if you look at the actual damages in terms of bodily harm or economic harm, you'll probably end up with at least, and this is on average, at least $1 million on average. If we come to the conclusion, and I think we will, that this is intentional, that this is premeditated murder, what's happening, premeditated mass murder, then we're also talking about punitive damages. And that means that everyone involved in this, all of the corporations, the pharmaceutical, financial corporations, the tech corporations, will have to pay for this. And I don't think they're going to survive this. We're going to need that money in order to create a whole new humane society in which human values play a role again, and not just materialistic stuff like cars and houses and money.
Oh, absolutely fascinating, Dr. Fudemich. Before we let you go, how can people learn more? How can people follow the work of the committee? And also, please give us just a little tidbit on the political party you're working with now in Germany. And what are some websites people can go to follow this?
Well, the website of the Corona Committee is, I think it's also in English, but you'll find, if you go to the German website, there's a button and then you can change into English. It's Corona-Ausschuss, AUSSCUSS.de. Ausschuss is the German word for committee. Our party is the only one who's fighting the measures. That's why we have a huge potential, and that's why they're trying to infiltrate us.
Excellent. Well, Dr. Fudemich, thank you so much for sharing your insight. Thank you for your work. And please keep us updated. We'd love to have you back.
I will. I'll keep you posted on the trial as well.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Folks, that was Dr. Rainer Fudemich, the co-founder of the Corona Investigative Committee, the first chairman of the BASIS, a new political party in Germany resisting these COVID measures. Thank you for joining us. I'm Alex Newman, your host. This is Conversations That Matter. We'll be back next time with much more. And until then, God bless you all.